You're listening to TIP.
Hey everyone, welcome to this Wednesday's release of the Bitcoin Fundamentals Podcast. This episode is brought to you by River, the place that I personally go to securely invest in Bitcoin with confidence and with zero fees. On today's show, I have a fascinating topic. We're talking about derivatives on Layer 2 Bitcoin Lightning. And not only that, but we're talking about how discrete log contracts, or DLCs, are now enabling two counterparties to need no intermediary to develop their contract terms. This was a topic that we covered way back in 2020, and back then it was more of a theoretical concept with nothing being fully built or put into practice. Fast forward to today, LN Markets has just recently rolled out this capability, and they've done it on the Lightning-only derivatives exchange that's doing $400 million in volume per month. An important disclosure to the listener, I was an advisor to Ego Death Capital when they made an investment into LN Markets, so I'm obviously an interested party in their success, and I think that that's an important highlight as you're listening through this. But with that said, and as you'll see in this interview, the software engineering and new applications being built on top of the Bitcoin Lightning Network are somewhat mind-blowing and definitely noteworthy for anybody building in this space. So with that, here's my interview with Romain Raphael from LN Markets.
Celebrating 10 years, you are listening to Bitcoin Fundamentals by the Investors Podcast Network. Now for your host, Preston Pysh.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm here with Romain and man, I'm excited. This conversation is so long overdue. Because we've been chatting on Twitter for years at this point. Welcome to the show. Thrilled to do this.
Thanks a lot for having me, Preston. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's crazy to me because I remember people on Twitter first highlighting like, whoa, look at what these guys are doing on Lightning. And they've got a derivatives exchange happening on Lightning right now. And I just remember saying, wow, I need to learn more about this. And as things usually go, I get lost in on tangents and whatever. And then in the background, you guys go from doing thousands of dollars in buying power exchanged or volume on your exchange to what was the last 30 days for you guys as far as volumes go, roughly?
On LN Markets, we did $450 million volume in January.
In the last 30 days or just this month?
Yeah. Just this month in January.
$350 million in buying power volume.
$450 million. We've had some huge growth lately. Very happy about it.
These numbers are crazy. That's crazy. $450 million in buying power in January 2024 alone on Lightning, right?
Yes. Of trading volume, I'm really excited to be here and speak with you, Preston, because I remember back in the days when we just launched LN Markets, you did this tweet. Basically, you quote tweeted our first original tweet, our Hello World tweet, saying, "Hey, we are the guys from LN Markets. We are live. You can do instant trading on Lightning." And you quoted this saying like, "Hey, this looks cool. Have you tried it?" And then we had this, like, it was our first Twitter storm, like so many answers, so many people reaching out like, "Yeah, I know this guy. That's cool." It was really exciting. And we had this crazy weekend in which we had like a record number in sign up and volume. So thanks a lot for shedding
on us. You guys did all the work, man. It's amazing. What's fascinating to me is that it's happening on Lightning. But before we get to all of that, I want to rewind a little bit and I want to first kind of introduce you and your background and get into this. So what events in your life led you up to creating a derivatives exchange on top of Lightning? Like what preceded all of this?
You know, it's a question that a lot of people ask. And I think for all people working in Bitcoin or in the Bitcoin industry, a lot of people ask. Over at dinner, you know, why do you do that? Or what led you to that? No, I mean, it's a question that I like. I was not predestined to work in this field at all. I have a business background first, so I'm not an engineer, which I always say it's important to say because a lot of people can be frightened about working in Bitcoin or working in the space because they think it's highly technical, etc. well, you don't need to be an engineer. You don't need to be a developer to be in the space and to build in the space. And I think it's very important to say this. So I was working in the financial industry. I was working in investment banks, doing trading on commodities in London, in France. And then I moved to Hong Kong. And while I was working in Hong Kong, I was reading a bit. It was 2012, 2013. And I was reading a bit about Bitcoin on Bloomberg. And it seemed like complete nonsense to me. Like I didn't understand anything about it. You had these articles about this anonymous currency created by somebody nobody knows, Satoshi Nakamoto. And you've got this money, which is run by computers doing complex computation without central bank. It basically didn't make a lot of sense to me. Until in the street I was living in Hong Kong, opened a shop with a big Bitcoin sign. And in fact, it was a Bitcoin ATM. And I just went to check it out of curiosity. And when I realized what you could do, I was mesmerized because I realized that you could go there. You had Hong Kong dollar. You could change them to BTC and then you could send Bitcoin all over the world.
Anywhere
within 10 minutes, and nobody could prevent you from doing that. And if you sent $100, then your counterparty was going to receive, let's say, 99.5. And I was amazed about it because when I was living in Hong Kong, I'm from France. I'm French. Maybe you noticed by the accent. Whenever I wanted to send money to my family, to my brothers, for example, in France, it was a nightmare because it took several days. The fees were really high. It was a really, really bad user experience. And then with Bitcoin, I had this tool in which I could very quickly and efficiently change local currency to Bitcoin and send it away. Then I freaked out. I was like, okay, so it works. It works for real. And now I need to understand how it works. And especially when you work in the banking industry, you're used to all the very old plumbing, like Swift payments, etc., blah, blah, blah. Payments take time. It's very complex, etc. And now you've got this software, which is developed open source, and you get this network peer-to-peer. Everybody can connect. Everybody can log in. Everybody can make payments. And it really seemed like the future of what payments and of what finance should be. So I paid more and more attention to it. And a couple of years later, so we discussed it with friends, etc. And I came back to France in 2015. And then I was like, okay, now I wanted to launch my own business. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I was like, I need to be in this field because it's too interesting. It's at the intersection of economics, you know, of finance, of technology, of the hacking world. You've got a bit of politics, a bit of sociology. So it's too fascinating to miss it. So I want to be in it. And we had this discussion with our co-founders. So with my co-founders, Com and Victor. And we're like, we want to be part of it. We don't know yet what we're going to do, but we want to be a part of it. So
people need to know that 2015, when you were having these discussions with your co-founders, Lightning was a dream at this point. It was just something that people were hypothetically thinking could potentially work for the scalability on the second layer. Back then, when you guys were talking, what was kind of the early ideas? Because I'm assuming it wasn't a Lightning derivatives exchange.
No. It was the early day. And I remember, I think in 2016, you had the first talks by Joseph Poon speaking about what could be Lightning and maybe the first version of the white paper, but it was really early. No, so it was before Lightning. We were very interested in Bitcoin, the object. And we had this idea that it was two things that it's very hard to define Bitcoin, but that it was two things at the same time, that there were two main angles to Bitcoin. One, the asset. Okay, Bitcoin and asset. We talk a lot about it these days with the ETF, etc. Bitcoin
store of value
for some people. Value, digital gold, etc. And then you've got Bitcoin, the protocol, Bitcoin, the programmable money, the financial architecture on which you can try to build financial services. At the beginning, we didn't really know which road to explore, and we first started exploring Bitcoin, the asset. So basically, we did some consulting, some research, some development around Bitcoin, and we managed a fund invested in Bitcoin. Okay. And so basically more focusing on Bitcoin, the asset, managing this fund. And doing that, we realized firsthand
how stressful it could be to manage Bitcoin firms, like to move Bitcoin firms in and out, you know, from an exchange. Because even today, you know, it's a very stressful experience sometimes to do a Bitcoin transaction, to see it on the blockchain, to follow, to make sure it's confirmed. Plus it can take time. The fees can be high. So it was always quite stressful, you know, to manage Bitcoin firms. And at the same time, in 2017-18, then the Lightning Network started to emerge and mature. And thanks to the Lightning Network, so this layer on top of Bitcoin, what the Lightning Network has enabled is the ability to do instant payments. So you can instantly do payments on Bitcoin in a scalable manner, again, at a very, very low cost. So when we first saw Lightning, we're like, okay, this is the future of Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is supposed to be the money of the internet that you can exchange online. And now, you know, we have this protocol, Lightning, which enables us to move money anywhere in the world very fast. And we were still, you know, like building a couple of stuff on Bitcoin, and we had this idea. I think we were one of the first, maybe with Blockstream. We opened an online shop with payments on Bitcoin. So basically we sold Bitcoin socks. Okay, we produced in Bitcoin socks that we sold on Lightning. And we had people purchasing it from all over the world, and even a guy from Australia who purchased socks, and we saw like the money flowing almost instantly. And it was, you get like this magical feeling, you know, when you do this Lightning transaction and you see in fact that you can transfer money without taking any counterparty risk in a very efficient manner, such as with Lightning. And, you know, it got us thinking, yeah, Lightning is very, very useful for payments for sure, but we could also use it for trading. Okay. We could leverage this technology not only for payments, but also for collateral payment. And that's how we decided, you know, to build the first derivatives exchange on the Lightning Network.
Unbelievable. So for the audience, I would assume most know what a derivative is, but there's probably a lot listening that they've heard the term a ton of times, but at its core, they don't necessarily know exactly what is a derivative. So let's define that. And then let's start going into more details of like the actual utility beyond the speculative way to lever Bitcoin's price action, which is not what we're promoting by any shape of the imagination. There's real utility in derivatives. Explain what a derivative is, and then let's talk about some of the real world use cases of a derivative.
So basically, a derivative is a contract. It's a contract whose value depends on the value of an underlying asset at a future time. Okay. So it's a very old concept. You had the first forward contracts on olive oil in antique Greece, or even on rice in old Japan. So this was a complex sentence. Okay. A contract whose value depends on an underlying. So let's take a very concrete example. Let's say, Preston, you are the treasurer at American Airlines, okay, at an airline company. So you are treasurer. So your role is to manage the cash of the company, and people book their flight. When they book their flight, they pay today. Okay. So let's take the example of a flight, which is due in 3 months. Tickets are sold today. The plane is full. It's good. You have the cash. People pay. Now, what is your risk as a treasurer? Well, there are potential risks, but let's say the main risk is the price of gasoline, which we know is volatile. In the current climate, it can go up, it can go down. You don't know. But if you are a careful treasurer, you would need to hedge that potential risk. Let's say tickets are sold today. Today, a barrel of crude oil is at $75. Basically, you have two options as a treasurer. Either you do nothing or you try to hedge. Let's say you do nothing. You are a lazy treasurer. You do nothing. It's a bit risky. Now, in 3 months, the price of a barrel of crude oil is at $60. People will congratulate you and take question. It was a bit risky, but in fact, okay, we can buy 60, what we would have bought 75. Okay. Now, in 3 months, the price is at $100. Then people will yell at you and tell you, Preston, you should have never done this. You should have hedged this. of course, the price was going to go up. So you should have hedged this risk. Now, how can you hedge? Well, you can physically buy oil today at 75. Okay. You can do that and you store crude oil, but you know, it's not really your job as a treasurer to store crude oil at your office.
Yeah.
Usually that's why derivatives contract exists. What you could do is there are two main types of derivatives contract. We say there are forwards and option. Let's see the first type of contract, which is a forward contract. You could say, okay, I want to lock today. The price is $75 per barrel. I want to lock this price. So you're going to buy a forward contract. You're going to lock the price of a barrel at 75 per barrel. So let's say within in 3 months, the price is at 90. You pay 75. Your trade, everyone is happy in your team. Now in 3 months, the price is at 50. Well, you still have to pay 75. Okay. But at least, and you were not reckless, you know, you hedge this risk. So that is what forward contracts are. It's a firm commitment to buy something at a future date at a given price. This is the first big type of derivative. It's forward and future. Forward are OTC contract, meaning it's two counterparties dealing them together. Futures are, we say, listed contracts. They are listed on an exchange. For example, on CME, you have listed future contracts on Bitcoin. Forward futures, it's a firm commitment. And then there is options. Options, they are, nowadays, they are more mainstream in a way because Robinhood made it very easy for people to trade options, but they are much more complex product. With option, what you could do is instead of locking the price at $75 per barrel, you could say, I want to buy the right to buy the barrel of oil at a future date at 75. I want to buy the right, meaning that I have the right to buy it at 75, but if it's below, I don't buy it. It's a different product. It's, you don't have this linear payoff. So you have to pay a premium to buy this option. So it's called the option premium. You have to buy it upfront. So let's say it costs you $10. You pay $10 today, and then you have the option to buy it in 3 months at 75. So if it's way above, if it's 100, 120, you will exercise the option. You will buy at 75 plus the $10 of the premium. So you will buy at 85. If it's below 60, 50, you will not exercise the option. You will buy in the market at 55 plus the option 65, for example. So this is the hedging use case or derivative. Now there are also speculation and arbitrage. It's hard to say in the world of derivative, which is the most popular use case. I would assume that in terms of volume, it's mostly speculation, like Bitcoin derivatives, for example, but there is also and always people who use derivatives for hedging, and that's why they were invented.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
So one of the most common questions I get from family and friends is, Preston, where do you buy your Bitcoin from personally? And the answer is really simple. I buy it on river.com. Not only can you easily buy Bitcoin with zero fees on recurring orders, you can have peace of mind knowing Bitcoin on River is held one-to-one in multi-sig cold storage, all while being fully licensed and regulated in the U.S. Plus, their relationship managers are U.S.-based and available by phone for you or your business. Additionally, River has built their own infrastructure from the ground up, which means they don't rely on third parties to function like the other Bitcoin exchanges. River also created a new feature not found anywhere else called River Link. It allows you to send Bitcoin over a text message to easily orange pill your family, pay a friend for dinner, or send a gift. There's absolutely a new standard in Bitcoin and River is setting it. So go to river.com/fundamentals and get up to $100 free when you sign up and buy Bitcoin. That's river.com/fundamentals.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a data-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, homeowners earn on average 20% or more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa makes vacation home ownership easy. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home by doing less, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com. That's vacasa.com to get started on your dream of owning a vacation home. Do you guys ever feel overwhelmed with all that's going on in the markets and you feel like you just can't keep up with the day-to-day news headlines? Today's show sponsor, Yahoo Finance, is my go-to solution to keeping up with today's top news and stay informed with what's happening globally. With Yahoo Finance, I'm able to see the biggest trends and biggest movers in the stock market, what's happening with interest rates, major geopolitical events, and much more. If it wasn't for Yahoo Finance, I would have no idea that Tesla is laying off 10% of their staff or why iPhone shipments are down 9% year over year. Yahoo Finance also has a number of other cool features, including a tool that lets you link in all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts. Yahoo Finance is one of my favorite tools that I use in my investing toolkit, and it's what I read each morning to kick off my day to stay in the loop with what's happening in the markets. Join more than 90 million monthly users today and get comprehensive financial news and analysis at yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
At the core of what you just described, we're thinking about a business, and I love the example you gave with the airline industry, because I think it's, you could go into farming, you could go into many different things, but at the core, when you deconstruct who needs these products, it's somebody that has a large exposure to some type of raw commodity that's very volatile, right? Or some type of input to their product or their service in the airline industry. Obviously, the fuel is an enormous part of their expense structure. And those fuel prices are extremely volatile. And like you point out, like that person who's managing the expense structure of the ticket prices to actually the plane flying 3 months later, and that's another core component here, is you have people buying something that they're not actually realizing for 3 months later, or even a year later in some cases, people buying tickets way out there. And so those components, they have to hedge this. And then whatever that cost is to hedge, they're then going to build that into the price of the tickets that they're selling, because they're not going to assume that cost. They're just going to push it to the consumers. And so that's the real live utility. I think derivatives get a very bad name because there's so much speculation that happens in derivatives that sometimes it's lost on a person learning about them or seeing them, that there really is real world utility for a derivatives product. But on the counterparty, there's literally professional speculators that are taking oftentimes the other side of these trades. And that's what in the news is often focused upon, right?
No, definitely. And even in the Bitcoin industry, you know, if you take the example of miners, for example, which is also an industry in which you are heavily dependent on the price of something volatile, i.e. volatile, which is Bitcoin, because your revenues are in Bitcoin and your spending and your costs, they are in US dollars, they are in euro, they are in yuan. Okay. So basically you are structurally long BTC and short USD. And sometimes as a business operator, it can be risky.
Okay. Yes.
I love the idea to be always long BTC, but you know, you run a business, you have to pay salaries. So if you have expectation that there's going to be a steep decrease in BTC price, it makes a lot of sense to be able, for example, to short BTC. Shorting meaning like selling a future contract or a forward contract on BTC USD price. And in this case, you will make money if BTC USD decrease, which will compensate the loss that you will incur on your regular business.
So I love this use case because you took what is very easy to kind of understand from a physical commodity standpoint. And I think when we go into Bitcoin, people might be looking at it and saying, oh, this is just an enormous amount of speculation. We're not talking about fuel going in an airplane anymore. But what we are talking about, as you so eloquently, you know, highlight here, is real energy costs that miners are having to deal with, and fiat denominated dollar, euro, whatever the denomination is, a bill to pay for these expenses to run these mining rigs. When we think about miners that would probably need to use a derivatives product the most, I would think that it would be miners that have very high energy costs and miners that have maybe a lot of variability in their grid. Now, I know some of them kind of lock in a fixed rate for a certain period of time, so maybe that doesn't necessarily apply the variance on the grid, but I'm curious if there's any other variables or situations or maybe anything other than mining that you see a derivatives for Bitcoin being something important to consider.
Yeah, I think it's probably a product that will emerge is a product linked to block space, I think, because a lot of business tend to be more and more sensitive to transaction fees. It can be exchanged when they need to validate transaction. Or if we take the example of Lightning, you know, there's a specific use case, which is going to be, I think, interesting as the network grows. So in Lightning, whoever opens a payment channel needs to close the channel, needs to be the one closing the channel and needs to be the one sending the channel closure transaction. And in this case, you are exposed to the evolution of transaction fees and you may want to hedge, you know, that potential risk that you have. Today, it's something that is not hedged by market participants, but as Coin and Lightning take off, I guess it's going to be a risk that's going to have to be hedged by market participants.
I love this point. I just want to explain to people that maybe on the technical side aren't intimately familiar with what we're talking about here. So I run my own node. I open channels to other nodes on Lightning Network, which is effectively like an abacus. So Fermain had a node and I wanted to open a 10 million sat channel to Romain. Those sats start out on my side. And as we continue to exercise this channel between each other on layer two, maybe at the end of 4 months, there's 5 million sats on Romain's side. There's 5 million sats on my side. And we want to close the channel. Well, we have to go back to layer one to close this channel between the two of us. So now we're exposed to on-chain Bitcoin fees to close out this channel. And we were also exposed to this when we opened the channel on layer one, but we knew exactly what those costs were when we opened the channel. But when we go to close this channel, the fees could be like they are right now, around 30 sats per VB. But you go back 2-3 weeks ago, they were 100 sats per VB, which were three times higher than they are right now. So if we would have had to have closed out that channel and we're dealing with fees that are three times higher 3 weeks ago than they are right now, and you have to think, okay, so this is not a large channel. It's just these two people, but put yourselves in the shoes of call it like a wallet of Satoshi or one of these really large Lightning service providers that are managing, call it tens of thousands of channels or whatever it is. I know River has a ton of channel management as well. If they are making economic calculations on the fees, the routing fees that they're going to collect by keeping these channels open, and the channels get pegged out on the other side and they want to close it and basically reopen another channel, that math of the layer one settlement to close out that channel is going to be a huge consideration on opening yet another channel. And just whether I just keep the existing channel open and the fees that I would collect through something that's kind of pegged out in the opposite direction of that channel. This is something personally, I think this is huge, what you're talking about here. And beyond because I think everybody kind of migrates to derivatives really being applicable to mining and not really thinking beyond that. But when we think about, and we've covered this a lot on the show as far as the layer two Lightning Network becoming the new risk-free rate. And when I look at this and I look at what you guys are doing by providing a derivatives exchange around this and looking at the fees that are being collected by people that are opening and closing these channels, I think this is great. Like, this is huge. Like, this is a massive use case that is only going to further solidify kind of what the going rate is for fees on layer two. It just strengthens it in a way that I know I personally wasn't expecting until kind of hearing this talking point. This is crazy. Anything else that you're seeing beyond that point? That is mind-blowing.
We firmly believe that there's going to be more and more Bitcoin-native products, whether it's linked to hash rate, hash price, transaction fees like block space. I see that the nearest use case we see, and actually doing a product on block space is something we are very interested in. And I'm sure this will lead to other ideas and other needs that, we don't really see right now.
All right. You guys have a big announcement. Discrete log contracts, DLCs. This one, we covered this on our show, 2 years ago. And it was like just being discovered as a thing to do. And I really haven't seen anything actually built on this. And it might be my own neglect of knowing who's doing it and who's not. But you guys at LN Markets are rolling out discrete log contracts. Describe what this is. This gets very technical very quickly, but as generically as possible so that people can kind of understand the general overview. What is a discrete log contract or a DLC?
Just before that, maybe, I'd just like to say that, our goal is to build the future of finance on Bitcoin. And we think Bitcoin as an infrastructure is the best infrastructure we can leverage to build innovative financial services. And in a way, when I talked to you about how painful, the relationship with the exchange was, there was a problem that luckily we were not exposed to, but which is an even much bigger problem, which is that often, and it's still the case, trading and custody happen at the same place within exchanges, whether it's spot or derivatives. And we've seen throughout the history of Bitcoin, to quote Satoshi, that trusted third parties are security holes. Well, they continue to be security holes since MTGOX and during the crypto contagion of 2022. We've had all these bankruptcies, all these failures. And in a way, thanks to Satoshi Nakamoto, we fixed money, but we didn't fix trading yet, because trading is still centralized at trusted third parties with trading and custody, which happen at the same place, which is, of course, highly insecure, highly dangerous. That's the main issue that we wanted to tackle with LN Markets since we start. And we wanted to build it on Bitcoin because we think it's the best collateral. So we started with LN Markets. And with LN Markets, we had this idea that we could leverage the Lightning Network for instant settlement. And if you have instant settlements, you can move money in and out very quickly from your wallet to the exchange back and forth. And in a way, you can reduce the time that you are at risk. Okay, you mentioned this Abacus on Lightning. Well, you can, on LN Markets, we made it very easy to move money just when you want to trade and to get funds back to your wallet just after your trade is closed. So basically, you still have counterparty risk, but only while the position is open. And you can move money instantly. And we think that the big value proposition of Bitcoin, and we've seen our volumes skyrocketing since 2022. And I guess this has a lot to do with, sadly, people realizing that, trusted third parties are dangerous and that we need to build more non-custodial trading. That's what we've done with LN Markets. It's for retail. Now, we've always been following DLCs. And now I get to your question.
Before you go there, I just want to highlight a really core thing that was very indirectly said in what you just pointed out. LN Markets was founded in 2019. Is that correct?
Yes.
2019. Think about all the explosions that happened because of counterparty risk in this past cycle, whether it was FTX, you name it. Anybody that was providing a custody service in this space was, for all intents and purposes, exploded through this debacle that happened on this last cycle. You guys have been around through that entire period of time with no issues whatsoever. And I think that that is beyond commendable considering you're a derivatives exchange. All right, let's talk about DLCs. Good luck describing this.
So thanks a lot for the kind words. We do not do yield, which
We don't have a token. So we really focused on risk management and on having something secure. So happy with our journey so far. And now back to DLCs. We've paid attention to DLCs from the start because they share a lot of similarities with the Lightning Network. First, they were invented in a way by the same MIT researcher, which is Tadeusz Drija, which is the co-author of the Lightning Network white paper and who designed DLCs. DLCs are native smart contracts on Bitcoin,
okay,
tied to the publication of a data feed, a price provided by an oracle. So now we're quite familiar with smart contracts in the crypto world as a whole, in other blockchain, etc. DLCs are smart contracts that made the Bitcoin way, meaning they are secure and fully secure. The white paper, the DLC white paper, was written in 2019, I guess. It's been around for a long time. There hasn't been really so far any application, any app taking off on DLCs. And in a way, we think our view is that it's a matter of use case. It's a matter of how you build a product which is easy enough, which is as simple to use as possible to make it a success. In a way, that's what we've tried to do with LN Market, which became a very popular application on Lightning. We pioneered some protocols like LN URLs that you could use for instant authentication, for instant payment, well, a lot of stuff that made it very simple, very easy to create an account and trade. And what we think we realized with LN Markets, we want to do the same thing with DLC. So for now, people have thought that it's, you know, it's complex, it's hard to manage, hard to deal with. We want to build a very simple user experience around DLCs. And what we want to build is a new kind of trading platform, a trustless trading platform built natively on Bitcoin. So basically a platform on which people can trade derivatives without taking any counterparty risk and ensuring that trading and custody are not risks, never. So that's what we want to build. And just a quick note, because we mentioned derivatives, why we decided to do derivatives in the first place is because being derivatives, it can be either physically or cash settled. You remember when we talked about the Treasurer of American Airlines, who needed to hedge its exposure to the barrel of oil? Well, he can enter into derivatives contracts, which are either physically settled or cash settled. Well, you physically settled, meaning taking delivery of the barrel of oil. Usually it's not physically settled. It's mostly cash settled. You just get the difference in price. Well, with derivatives, there are contracts and Bitcoin derivatives like futures and options. The one we do on LN Markets, they can be settled in BTC. And that's extremely important because when we launched LN Markets, on Lightning, you could, and you still can, in a way, only trade Bitcoin. It's the only value, it's the only token that you can exchange. So initially, it made a lot of sense to build a derivatives platform because Bitcoin is the native unit that you exchange at the end of the product. It's the same today for DLCs.
Okay.
These smart contracts on Bitcoin, they can only be traded and settled in Bitcoin, in BTC. And the platform within DLC Market, the platform that we build, we are thinking about different kinds of products. First, it's an important distinction. It's a platform which is for institutions. LN Markets is a platform that was designed for retail clients. We build a platform for institutions. Okay, and we think it makes much more sense for institutions to use DLCs. Why? Because we introduce a novel approach to DLCs. So now let's go back to DLCs. In a way, they are quite similar to, the way they work is quite similar to, the Lightning Network. In the Lightning Network, you know, people before opening a channel, they exchange, various signature, okay, before they open a channel, and then they can use this channel to make a lot of payments between themselves. With DLCs, DLCs are a kind of one-time payment channel. What DLCs are if you and me, Preston, and me, we open a DLC together, what we're going to do is we're going to lock funds in the Bitcoin blockchain. We're going to do a multi-sig transaction. We're going to lock funds in the Bitcoin blockchain. And the release of the fund will be tied to the publication of a prize by an oracle from the real world. And let's say we do a product, we do a future product, for example, which is tied to BTC USD. Well, there will be an oracle, which could be an exchange, which could be Coinbase, which could be whatever, which will testify the price of BTC USD. And upon publication of the price by an oracle like Coinbase, at the expiry of the product, automatically, each of us will receive our respective payoff. So let's say you are long Bitcoin, I am short Bitcoin, and the price of Bitcoin goes up. Well, at the end of the product, the oracle will feed some data to the smart contract, and you will get the positive P&L of the product. And all this will be done automatically without any action from our side. So with DLC, we can do some financial contracts, some derivative products, which could be linked. So we could customize any type of product as long as there is an oracle which publishes a price and there is a settlement which happens in BTC. Is that okay for now?
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The Investors Podcast Network is launching something new that hasn't been offered in years. It was very popular when we offered it years ago, and we're bringing it back again. We've launched a new stock investing course that dives deep into the first principles of sound investment strategies and explores a variety of relevant investing topics, ranging from the fundamental differences between active and passive investors, how to build and monitor a stock portfolio, tips for optimizing your retirement savings, and much more. For a limited time, all We Study Billionaires listeners get 15% off with the code WSB15 when you visit theinvestorspodcast.com/stock course. That's code WSB15 at theinvestorspodcast.com/stock course, or simply click the link in the show notes for this episode.
All right, back to the show.
Okay, so when I'm really trying to simplify, because this gets so complicated, for the listener, when we're talking about DLCs, just this discrete log contracts, let me give a like really generic example for people to maybe, and Ramin, correct me if this is not correct, but this is my understanding of it. Okay. Let's say you and I were trying to make a prediction on, we were placing a bet, a $10 bet on whether it was going to rain on Friday of this coming week, right? We both take our $10. We stick it in a box. The box is then locked. And then Friday comes, and according to and the terms of our reference, right, we're going to say if this website or these three websites, all three say it's going to rain on Friday, and it says it literally prints rain on their website, then on Friday, this box will automatically unlock and the funds will be distributed to whoever was taking the side that, yes, it's going to rain on Friday. And all of this is done through mathematics and encryption. I think for anybody, is that a pretty good overview?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Okay.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
Okay. So one of the things that you guys talk about in your white paper that I've reviewed is this idea of a central, like, what was the term for?
Coordinator.
Centralized coordinator. Yeah. So the centralized coordinator in this example would be the terms that we both agree to before we basically lock the $10 in the box. And then that central coordinator would then go to the three sites that we all agreed were going to be the three sites. And we agreed that it had to print rain on the site in text. But all those terms between the two of us are agreed upon prior to locking the $10 in the box. And then once we agree on these terms, we basically both put the funds into an escrow, into the box, and then the code will execute the rest from that point forward, correct?
Yes, yes, correct. I think you mentioned a lot of very interesting points about DLC. First, it's that it's in a way, it's, that's why also it's called discrete lock contract. It's because the Oracle doesn't even need to know that there is a smart contract, that there is, you know, like a DLC between you and me. The Oracle just certifies prices, you know, like let's say every minute, every 10 minutes, certify some piece of data, but doesn't know who uses it, if it's being used, etc. So there's some sense of privacy that is really interesting in it. There's also some sense of auditability because when we do, you know, this DLC, you and me, we lock funds in the Bitcoin blockchain and each of us can look at it in the blockchain and make sure that everything goes as planned. There's this sense of programmability. Now, it's maybe one of the reasons in our view why DLCs have not taken off yet. It's also because they are cumbersome to implement. And not only implement, in fact, it's hard to find a counterparty. For your example, you know, it's a theoretical setup between you and me having this opposite expectation. But, you know, in real life, it's really hard to find one peer which has the exact opposite expectation as you and who wants to enter a DLC, who is savvy enough to do that, etc. There's a market ID, there's also the practical implementation of it. If we have to do this peer-to-peer DLC together, well, it's a bit cumbersome to do. We have to do some back and forth to exchange some signatures, blah, blah, blah. Plus, so we have to stay online. It's a bit hard to implement. And that's why we introduce this centralized coordinator. Okay. This coordinator, which is the service provided by us. So the name of the platform is DLC Markets. We never take custody of the funds. Never, never, ever, but we play the role of coordinator to simplify the setup of DLCs. And by having a centralized coordinator, which is always online, we make sure that it's very easy. It's just a matter of plugging in your Bitcoin wallet and clicking on several buttons to sign a few transactions and boom, the DLC is set up. So we ease this setup. Plus it's a bit technical. It's in the white paper, but for people who want to listen to it, it's go deeper. They can go to our white paper. We solve a problem which has flagged DLC a little bit, which is a three option dilemma. Without a coordinator, when we do this exchange of signature, there's always one of us who is the last one that needs to sign the transaction. Okay. And in a sense, I have your signature and I can wait a little bit to see if, you know, the data from the real world goes on my side. Let's say we bet on BTC USD price. You are long, I am short. At the final step of a DLC, there's always the initiator is always in a bad position, the initiator of the DLC, because he has to wait for the signature from the other party. And if the other party is non-cooperative, they can exploit this. They can wait to see how the price will go. Thanks to a centralized coordinator, we solve this dilemma and we make sure that there is no longer this three-option dilemma that has plagued DLCs. Plus, you know, working on the, and there's been a lot of R&D, which has been done by Theo, our in-house researcher. We've also been able to build on the DLC protocol to replicate the life of a derivative product in the real world. So
replicate, for example, margin call, replicate liquidation, and the final settlement. Of course, all this is much is doable, and then is much more simple thanks to the coordinator. Now, it can get a bit technical, so all this is in our white paper.
We'll definitely have a link to this in the show notes, because I think anybody who's been following this space for a period of time are familiar with the Oracle problem, the Oracle dilemma. That can never, I don't think it can be ever fully mitigated, but there's ways, like you're talking about, this centralized coordinator as a way to de-risk it as much as possible. You talked about this, and I want to get your thoughts on that, but you also talked about this free option dilemma. To try to just maybe simplify this idea, because I think this is a really important idea that you guys are solving for, and it's a complex, all this derivative stuff gets really complicated really fast. But this would be kind of my way, and correct me again if I'm off target here. For the free option dilemma, think of it maybe from like a real estate developer's standpoint. Like, you would be saying, hey, you have the option to build on this land. The cost, I would give you, Romain, that option. But the whole time I'm sitting there on this plot of land, and maybe there's more businesses and stuff that are cropping up, which is making it more valuable. And for you to buy that option, it was very minimal. But for me, the risk of maybe nobody shows up and the land maybe gets less valuable or more valuable, depending on the circumstances, gives you this free option to exercise. Because if it didn't become more valuable, you're just kind of just walk away and it's like, oh, well, tough luck, dude. Sorry. Now, there's typically a premium built into this optionality or a cost that for you to have that option, you would pay whatever amount. But if it's not, if it doesn't offset my holding costs or my opportunity cost with that property during that period of time, that's kind of where this free option dilemma really kind of presents itself. And you're saying that through the white paper that you guys have put out on all of this, you solve this dilemma of providing a free option in the market. I'd probably have to dig into this a lot more to fully comprehend and understand how that's happening. But for the listener, they fully outline it in their white paper.
Yeah. And also what's good, I guess it's kind of like LN market, DLC market is going to be out really soon. Right now we're in beta. And the best is to use it. You know, I talked to you about how I found out about Bitcoin. You know, the white paper, Bitcoin white paper, if I had started with the white paper, it would have been much too complex. And I would have stopped there. It's just using products, using stuff that you get to understand them and be more curious about them. It was this for Bitcoin. I think with LN Market, we created an experience in which it's the case for Lightning. You know, it's you make the technology invisible in a way. You just use it because it's useful. It works. It enables fast settlement. And with DLC, we want to make the same. I mean, for all the tech interested people, et cetera, there is white papers, there are a lot of stuff to which they can refer to, but we think the beauty of it, and when we start, you know, doing demos to hedge fund, etc., the beauty of it is that you can do trustless trading on top of Bitcoin, and it's just awesome when you look at the blockchain and when you see, you know, the product working and actually being able to enter derivatives contract without taking any counterparty risk on Bitcoin. We are very proud of it because we think it's what will help accelerate Bitcoin as an infrastructure.
I love it. One other note on the DLC stuff, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is that the only two people that actually know the terms of the contract are the two participants. Let's say somebody, going back to our example of predicting the rain, right? If you see all these, if you were actually able to peer into, call it 10,000 contracts of everybody trying to predict the rain, there might be some type of market signal in knowing the sheer volume of people placing a position on said event. And it's my understanding that that's all cryptographically protected from the other market participants from seeing what the actual terms of that contract are.
Yeah, you've got privacy embedded, and privacy is important when you do this kind of financial instrument. So yeah, it's embedded by design, you know. And you talked about the Oracle problem, and of course, it's a very important and crucial topic when we talk about, you know, non-custodial trading, trustless trading. It's not something, it's a very, very hard problem. It's not a problem that we pretend to solve or to tackle with our solutions. There are several ways that you can mitigate, you know, the importance of the reliance on the Oracle. You could use different Oracles. You can do, you know, you can use a set of Oracle and do the median and exclude, you know, the higher and lower values. We also think that that's why it's interesting also to build products tied to Bitcoin, because in a way, Bitcoin Core can be the Oracle. Like if you think about trees, for example, or block space, it's something that, you know, that is observable by everyone. And so you can have this kind of distributed Oracle, which is, you know, the Bitcoin network itself. So it makes a lot of sense for us to build this kind of products. And it's while on LN markets, we've been very focused on BTC USD future. For DLC markets, we are really going to focus on, you know, the Bitcoin native economy and how we can leverage derivatives to for hedging in a secure way, because the Oracle is Bitcoin itself.
All right. So you just slam dunked the me saying that the Oracle problem, I think I might have used the word never in there, but you're right. If you're looking at it from fee on-chain layer one fees, I guess that would be something that you wouldn't have to worry about the Oracle, correct? Like I'm thinking through that. I think you're right.
Of course, there are some, you know, some technical assistance. I don't think it's as simple as it wouldn't be as simple as that, but, you know, we can, so I don't think we can fully solve it, but we can design a scheme in which there is much less reliance on a trusted third party, as is currently the case.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, anybody that's entering into a contract, you and I entering into a contract saying, yes, these are the terms and conditions that will release the funds, we're both agreeing to whatever that is. Right. And if there's risk in one of the data sources that we're both relying on to validate the final, you know, at the time of maturity of the contract, that's on both of us to figure that out and be responsible for our decision.
Yes, definitely. And I mentioned Bitcoin native products. Also, if we see more broadly on how Bitcoin can help reshape finance, in the traditional world of finance, there are big way to trade derivatives. One is on exchange. It's what we call listed derivatives. And the other one is OTC. It's when institutions trade directly between themselves. And it's a massive, massive market. I mean, the total size of the derivatives market is like $600 trillion yeah. per year. So it's a very, very big market. And the majority are settled OTC.
So just the foot stomp here, six times the size of the fixed income market, just for people to kind of wrap their head around that number that he just said. It's six times the fixed income market and call it 12 times the equity, global equity market-ish.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's an absurdly big market, yeah, definitely. And for OTC, you know, in order, so listed markets, they rely on a trusted third party, which is the exchange. And when institutions trade OTC, trade directly in the traditional world, what they do to lower their risk in case one of the counterparties goes bankrupt, in case one of the counterparties, you know, cannot meet its commitment, is they would enter into what is called an ISDA, ISDA agreement, which is basically, you know, a 60 to 80 page PDF that financial institutions will see. They will run through the legal department and they basically, it will detail all the clauses about what would happen in case, what is a credit event, what is a default, what happened in case of default, etc. And that's what made OTC markets robust in the financial world, in the traditional world. Well, ISDA agreements do not exist in OTC markets for Bitcoin derivatives. Okay, so basically, people, no option if they want to trade Bitcoin derivatives OTC, then to go to a trusted third party, to go to a centralized marketplace, which is at the same time, where there is at the same time, trading and custody, which is in the end a security hold. What we want to do with DLC market is create an alternative to the ISDA agreement, but built for the Bitcoin world, okay, for Bitcoin derivatives. And instead of having a 60-page PDF, all the rules of the trading are written in a smart contract, in a DLC, observable in the Bitcoin blockchain with full privacy.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable that it's unbelievable that you're taking so much administration and condensing it down and compressing it down to something that, I mean, I'm just thinking of all the people from an administrative standpoint, doing something of a $600 trillion market cap in size, annualized basis type activities, and you're compressing so much of this into something that is just way smaller from a headcount standpoint. And I think from the end user's standpoint, they're going to be just so much more satisfied. And the other part that I like about this is the fact that people can't actually see the contracts kind of removes whatever honeypot of trying to manipulate the reference sources. You lose that, right? Like people don't know what is necessarily or the magnitude of what's being traded based off of the whatever the Oracle is trying to find. There's just a whole lot to this. I would think if a person was doing this a lot, like re-entering a type of contract numerous times, that there would just, you would want to really understand what the terms and conditions of each one of those contracts were to know the reliability of the execution, right? And I wonder if that in itself is something that from a service standpoint would be valuable to market participants. Like, hey, these terms and conditions were used 10,000 times, and there wasn't one person that ever complained that the final execution of the contract had issues.
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's something that we could, there are some kind of standardization, you know, market standardization that could take place in the end. That's a very good point. And when you say that it simplifies a lot of things, I think that the ethos of Bitcoin, you know, and if I come back to Bitcoin as a payment system, it's magnificent because it so much simplifies what a payment system is and how money should work compared to the legacy system.
Well, I could talk to you all day long. I find this stuff beyond fascinating. Congrats on all the success. It's just so cool to watch what you guys have been doing, and at the pace that you're doing it is kind of crazy to me. But Romain, we'll have the link in the show notes to the white paper. We'll have a link to Ellen Market's Twitter. We'll have a link to your Twitter. Anything else you want to highlight for people to check out other than those things?
For people interested in DLC, they can just go to dlcmarkets.com and sign up, you know, for the beta that's coming soon. And I'd like to, you know, take this opportunity to thank you, Preston, for the continued support.
Yeah.
Since your 2021 tweet to now.
My pleasure. It has been just a pleasure to watch you guys building. I love watching builders and engineers at heart, right? Like, it's just really exciting to see how revolutionary this stuff is compared to the legacy system. And you guys are at the tip of the spear of that activity. So bravo to you guys. Thank you for making time, Romain. And this was a blast.
Thanks a lot for having me. Have a nice day.
Thanks.
If you guys enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow the show on whatever podcast application you use. Just search for We Study Billionaires. The Bitcoin-specific shows come out every Wednesday, and I'd love to have you as a regular listener. If you enjoyed the show or you learned something new or you found it valuable, if you can leave a review, we would really appreciate that. And it's something that helps others find the interview in the search algorithm. So anything you can do to help out with a review, we would just greatly appreciate. And with that, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. To access our show notes and courses, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. Follow us on TikTok at The Investors Podcast, on Instagram and LinkedIn at The Investors Podcast Network, and X at TIP_network. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by The Investors Podcast Network. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.